It's the Fan Early Morning Show on a Thursday in the beginning of August as the football on the calendar officially back on TV. I'm Austin Bechtold with you as the New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns will battle it out in one of the best weekends in all of football. Hall of Fame weekend in Canton, Ohio. Jets, Browns, won't see Aaron Rodgers, but we'll get to see Zach Wilson as the Jets are favored in the game at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium. A lot of football talk coming up today, but I want to first start with the Pirates. After the trading deadline on Tuesday, my first chance to be able to react to everything that went down for the Buccos. Trading Austin Hedges to the Texas Rangers for international bonus money, which I found a little bit funny just because it seemed like there were reports that four teams, maybe even five teams, were interested in acquiring the veteran backstop who does, and we got to give Austin Hedges credit, he does have a very, very solid ability to pitch frame. That might come with batting 170. If it was like softball and he can be there could be a designated player and somebody hit for Austin Hedges, that would have been a lot more preferred than having him have to bat ninth and not be able to turn the lineup around at all compared to some of the players that the Pirates have been able to put in that position afterwards. Now, it's still mostly been if Jason DeLay is in there, he'll be the one that does the catching and bats ninth, who was recalled after Hedges was traded away. But it was basically a bidding war for international bonus money. And the Pirates have been aggressive on the international market. They've signed. So one thing that did not happen very much in the Neil Huntington era that has happened a fair amount in Ben Cherington's regime is that the team is not afraid to be aggressive in signing who MLB Pipeline considers to be one of the top 30 international prospects. There is no international draft. There is no way to be able to sort through the players that are coming over to different organizations in the international market. It's basically who is willing to spend the most money on different players. And the Pirates have been aggressive. They've signed Tony Blanco. They signed a couple of other pitchers to deals, Christopher Cruz being one of them, that are guys in the top 15, guys in the top 20, even in the top 25. And that includes Johnny Severino, who the Brewers signed in the 2022 international signing period. He was the number 21 ranked prospect by MLB Pipeline, Jonathan Mayo, Jim Callis, and company, that the Pirates have been trying to sort out and trying to sign. I mean, these are also 16, 17, 18-year-old kids who you're basically considering to be lottery tickets at this point. You don't know what you're going to get, but it's basically like trying to draft a young high school player, but these guys are a little bit less proven and a little bit less seen on just the overall national baseball circuit in terms of perfect game, All-America circuit, stuff like that. So I don't really have a problem with Austin Hedges being traded for international bonus money. I just think it was kind of hilarious that the Pirates were basically having a bidding war for who will give them the most bonus money. The Rich Hill and G-Man Choi deal kind of caught me off guard. Not that they got traded. That was to be way expected. Now, there were some rumors and thoughts that G-Man Choi would not be traded away from the Pirates just because who is going to play at first base? Connor Joe, an outfielder by trade, has started to take some cracks at first base. It's gone okay so far. Joe led off for the Pirates yesterday in a 6-3 loss. Ended up getting on base twice, had a hit and four at-bats, also walked. He's hitting .243, .746 OPS against Eduardo Rodriguez, who nixed a trade to the Los Angeles Dodgers and basically said, look, I want to be closer to my family. I want to stay pretty much in the central part of the United States, northern part of the country. He did not want to be in sunny Southern California on a contender. And he has a chance to be able to opt out of his deal anyway. It's only a couple months. You have August, September, and the Dodgers will likely be playing into October. So you're talking about 2.5 months that you're going to be spending in one of the places that has the best weather of anywhere in the country. one of the best teams in the country, one of the best rotations in the country, and a team that consistently makes the playoffs here in and here out every single season. And yeah, the Dodgers have a shot at winning that division once again. Arizona has started to fall back into really being a middle-of-the-road team again. Corbin Carroll's fantastic. He should be Rookie of the Year. Will Arizona viably have a shot to win that division? Not at this point. Can they still win a wild card? I think so. They traded Andrew Chafin away. Arizona didn't do really much of anything inspiring in terms of acquiring key type of players at the deadline to make you think that they're really going to make a run at this. But it might be what's like what Cincinnati did in Arizona, and they're going to try to stand pat, hold on to their young talent, their young core, which has gotten them to this point, and just kind of ride it out and say, hey, we'll get a peripheral piece, just somebody small to be able to surround you with, try to help you out a little bit, but hey, you got us here, you take us there to the playoffs. And that's what the mentality has got to be for the Pirates the rest of the season. Now, Rich Hill said that literally an hour or so after he was traded, maybe even mere moments, that he believes that this team has a chance to be able to do some damage this year. Now, is that actually the honest truth about the matter? Probably not. I think we all agree it's not, and that the Pirates are in no position to be able to make the playoffs this year, currently still 11 games under 500. But what I do want to see is improvement, vast improvement. Rich Hill is no longer on this roster. The Pirates also traded away Rodolfo Castro to the Philadelphia Phillies. If there was any head-scratching trade, it was that one. And not so much that they dealt Castro. It was the fact that, okay, I kind of get it. What spot does he have on this team moving forward? He's a 24-year-old switch-hitting second baseman who can't bat left-handed. Rodolfo Castro, and as you know in baseball, switch hitters, the majority of the time, you're going to face a right-handed pitcher. So you're going to be batted left-handed. And Rodolfo Castro could not hit from the left side of the plate. How does that make any sense whatsoever? A switch hitter who cannot bat left-handed. He was playing exclusively against left-handers, batting from the right side, where he did have some solid success. But if you're a switch hitter and you're platooning basically as a left-handed guy, as a right-handed bat against left-handers, there's not that much of a spot for you. When you have Nick Gonzalez at second, when you have Leiva Peguero, who has looked really solid so far in the middle of the infield, there's not much that you can do at this point to truly consider that Rodolfo Castro would be a member of this team. So they traded him to the Philadelphia Phillies, ended up getting a left-handed pitcher. Falter is his last name. 0-7 with the Phillies this year. Not great. But it seems like the Pirates like the upside. Ben Cherington said that they've been following him for the last couple of years. They like what he can bring to the table. But this is all about what the kids bring. Rich Hill and G-Man Choi being traded away to San Diego for a package that included who is now the 17th overall prospect in the Pirates system, Jackson Wolf, a left-hander who made his major league debut earlier this year. Pitched 5 innings, gave up 3 runs, 6 hits. Only had 1 strikeout in that game for San Diego. That was earlier in July. He has pitched primarily in Double-A this season, to the tune of a 4.08 ERA in 18 games, 88 in the third innings pitched. He does have 105 strikeouts, 22 walks in those 88 innings. And that's something that really could be, I don't know if inspiring is the right word, but it makes you think okay about what the Pirates got back in that return. Look, Rich Hill was 43. G-Man Choi played 23 games with the Pirates. And if it wasn't for G-Man Choi coming back and being on an absolute tear and raising his batting average up what seems like 100 points, would the Pirates have been able to get this deal done where, yes, San Diego's farm system has been depleted over the last couple of years with trades of Juan Soto, Josh Hader, that how much is the value of a middle-tier prospect in their system? Well, Jackson Wolf seems okay. He pitched at WVU. The Pirates said that Ben Cherington said he did not get to lay eyes on him, but members of the organization did when he was a Mountaineer. And just overall for the Pirates, you're turning it over to the young guys, which was the case in the middle of July already. And there's been a little bit of ups and downs, but you're able to take two out of three from Philadelphia. The split against Detroit is, I think, more so the pitcher that you went up against in Eduardo Rodriguez. And let's get Oswaldo Beto out of here. Back to AAA. Put him in the bullpen. I don't care. I don't want to see any more Beto. There's nothing inspiring about him. There's nothing that makes you think he can be an MLB starter at all. I mean, what do you see from Oswaldo Beto that truly makes you believe he can stick in this rotation as a five? I mean, that's it. That's his ceiling. He's a 4A player. There's nothing that I really like from Beto other than his breaking pitch. And I just do not think that the Pirates should be deploying him out there every day. It should be Luis Ortiz. But Luis Ortiz is also not ready. He has to earn it, Ben Cherington said. And he is not in AAA. He's been so up and down. He'll allow four runs. He'll allow five runs. Then he'll come back and go five innings of two-run ball. Luis Ortiz has not done anything consistently to earn a spot back in the major leagues. Neither has Rolandy Contreras, who has basically been banished to the abyss. Where is Rolandy? He's in Florida trying to make things work. Maybe he's working with Paul Skeens. Hope Paul Skeens doesn't take any advice from Rolandy Contreras. Don't want his fastball to decrease by 3 miles an hour. Maybe Paul Skeens can get Rolandy Contreras back to throwing 95, 96 miles an hour instead of throwing 92, 93, which is a significant reason why he became a shell of himself on the mound this year. I like Liova Peguero. You should stick him at second base or shortstop throughout the remainder of the season. It appears that O'Neill Cruz is a little bit later into the recovery process than what a lot of people originally anticipated, or what a lot of people anticipated at first, that he would be back in the start of August, the middle of August. Now, September is more so when he can be back. And the only reason you bring back O'Neill Cruz, not so much that he can work with some of these younger guys, I wouldn't call that overrated, but it doesn't seem like that is really why you would bring a player back at this point when you're going to be completely out of the race. It's just that you get him at bats so that this is not a complete lost year. And a lot of people have talked about, well, why don't you just shut him down? Why don't you just not have him play at all? Because there's a lot of value in having O'Neill Cruz come back and still be able to hit. Not so much to the guys around him and to the Pirates being able to win football games, to the Pirates being able to win baseball games, as we are clearly getting into football season with the Hall of Fame game tonight. But it's all about O'Neill Cruz being able to just get back into the thick of it and get a chance to just remain on the field. Why not? Why not give him a month to be able to just resume baseball activities and play well? The Pirates did it with David Bednar at the end of the year last year. He did battle some issues, some back issues, but the Pirates brought him back, let him pitch, and he has been, arguably, the best closer in baseball this year. Plus, if the Pirates are going to try to negotiate a long-term contract with O'Neill Cruz, why not be able to get some more at-bats in there to see what you got? I think the Pirates somewhat know what they have, but really, do they? He hasn't played that much. Brian Reynolds had three hits yesterday. Andrew McCutchen with three hits yesterday. That's always great to see. Also drove in a run on base four times, including a walk. Henry Davis walked twice, had an RBI. 0 for 4 for Key Brian Hayes, also drove in a run. Jack Sawinski struck out three times, and that's just one of my gripes with Jack Sawinski. He strikes out way too much, but his OPS is by far the best on the team at 831 for those qualified. Liova Peguero in limited at-bats, 907. Alika Williams got a hit in the game. He struggled early on, but now he's hitting 250 in limited at-bats as well. And then Jason DeLay, who's a part of a three-catcher rotation, it seems like, at this point, with Andy Rodriguez as the primary catcher. Henry Davis, it appears, is going to start getting some time behind the dish, which I'm excited about. It's going to be cool to see Davis really just get some time to catch. He's only caught one inning. And It'll be Jason DeLay basically trying to mentor and mold those guys as the Pirates played Austin Hedges so much, practically just to see what they could get for him and to get international bonus money instead of just DFAing him. I'll take it. Jason Mackey on the Fan Morning Show yesterday talked about Mitch Keller and how the Pirates did not trade him, did not trade David Bednar. Keller has a couple years left on his contract before he's a free agent. There was a report out of L.A. that it was not yet known if this was really something that everybody knew from a Dodgers insider on Sports Talk Radio in L.A., that the Pirates lowballed Mitch Keller and that he wasn't very happy about the deal and that the Pirates were exploring offers for him. Now, is that really the truth? I don't know. Is that just the Dodgers just being the Dodgers and fishing for any type of player that they can? And if there's a rumor out there, try to throw it against the wall, see if it sticks. Jason Mackey on Mitch Keller. Keller wants to be here. The Pirates want him here. Well, that seems apparent. You didn't trade him. And Mitch has continuously stated that he likes being a member of the Pirates. Plus, if he can be your number two behind Paul Skeens and the guy in between Skeens and ideally Quinn Priester, who's looked okay despite an ERA of about 8 in 3-4 starts. Regarding Keller, it makes sense. Between now and the end of the regular season, it would make a lot of sense for them to agree to a contract. If that's the case, the Pirates should just not wait until what seems like the next logical time to get a deal done, which is the winter meetings. And one reason why I say that is the Pirates are an organization that pride themselves, that it's a big reason why they've been able to keep Brian Reynolds and keep Brian Hayes on signing young players when they are young, when they are inexpensive, when they are a little bit cheap. They did that with Brian Hayes. Has he lived up to it so far? No. Has Brian Reynolds lived up to it so far in a couple of months? He had a great April. That's right around when he signed the deal. How good has Brian Reynolds been after that? He was hurt for a little bit of time. But I mean, Reynolds has not been that offensive catalyst that you hope he would have been. He was okay with runners in scoring position to begin. He was hitting 300 at one point in one stretch. Now he's way under 200, and it's not going very well. But back to Keller. You need guys in the top of your rotation. If you truly believe you can compete in 2024, the trading Mitch Keller would make absolutely no sense, and it would have shown the narrative that the Pirates don't believe that they're close. And the Pirates need to show that they're close. If they truly imagine that Nick Gonzalez can be the everyday second baseman, Leova Peguero can factor in the infield, someone's got to play first base. One of the guys, Rivas, that the Buccos acquired from San Diego in the Rich Hill G-Man Choi trade, played with the Cubs about 100 games last season. He'll be a guy that seemingly will platoon with Connor Joe at first base, left-handed bat, Joe at righty. And that those are the guys that you're looking at first base. But who knows? Jared Chiolo could move over to first base. Maybe Leova Peguero could move over to first base. It's likely that a young guy is going to move over to that position unless the Pirates decide to be aggressive in free agency with a first baseman and not just sign a guy. Sign an actual player because you're paying your guys on the roster nothing. Absolutely nothing. So Mitch Keller needs to be on this team. David Bednar needs to be on this team. Mitch Keller has to be the anchor of the rotation right now, especially with Paul Skeens not here yet, and likely not here until June or July of 24. So a deal with Mitch Keller makes sense, as long as you sign the guy that can give you a 350 ERA and not a 5 ERA. He was very poor in July. Did bounce back against the Phillies, even though it ended up being a 2-1 loss last Friday. But Mitch Keller needs to be here. And the Pirates need to pay him, partly because they're not paying anybody else, but because Mitch Keller has shown flashes that he can be that pitcher that you need him to be at the top of the rotation. And if he can just continue to sustain it over these next couple of weeks, over these next 2 months, when they will be negotiating a contract with him, there should be a good middle ground that they're not paying him as a true number one, and they're not paying him to be a number three or a number four. Coming up next, it's football season. T.J. Watt was ranked in the top 100. You knew that was going to be the case. But where did he spot? Where is T.J. Watt on the top 100 players list as voted on by the players? Did the players get it right? as a lot of the rankings have shown previously, including Trevor Lawrence, rated in the 90s. No, it doesn't seem like the players got this one right at all with TJ Watt. Talk about it next. I'm Austin Bechtold, FanOily Morning Show, 937 The Fan. Fan Early Morning Show. I'm Austin Bechtold with you. TJ Watt, one of the best players in football, obviously. Well, is he in the top 25? According to his peers, his fellow NFL players? Now, don't forget, TJ Watt did miss significant time last season due to a major injury. And it seems like that ended up being a major reason why in the new NFL Top 100 Players list, voted on by the players, TJ Watt was ranked and regarded as the 27th best player in all of football. 27th. Now, if you just want to try to guess other players that are ahead of him, how about Jaire Alexander went from not ranked to 26. Now, Alexander missed all but four games in 2021 and is a star corner for Green Bay, made the Pro Bowl, was really good defensively, passer rating of 66.4 for opposing quarterbacks. So Jaire Alexander is ahead of TJ Watt. Okay, Derrick Henry dropped 13 spots to 25. He was also hurt. And if there's one thing about these top 100 rankings, which are voted on at the end of the season, there are so many players that drop just frankly because they got hurt. And the players basically don't take into account that, yeah, that is a natural part of the game. So TJ Watt, 27. Jaire Alexander, 26. Derrick Henry, 25. Roquan Smith up 60 spots to 24. He went from the Bears to the Ravens. Three interceptions, 4.5 sacks, 6 pass defense. He was third in the league in tackles with 169, and he was great. First team all pro. Pro bowler. First time that's ever happened in his career. But this is the one that gets me. At 23rd, the defensive rookie of the year, Sauce Gardner, is ranked higher than TJ Watt. I'm sorry, is Sauce Gardner better than TJ Watt? I understand that he was a big play guy on the Jets, the flair of Sauce Gardner, his playmaking abilities. I'm not trying to say Sauce Gardner isn't a good player. He is. But you can't tell me that TJ Watt, who consistently has been as dominant as any, as a pass rusher, dominant as any, that when he steps on the football field, he is the best player on the field. Unless you're playing up against a star quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, TJ Watt is the best player on either side on the field. Watt came in at number 6 last season after tying the NFL sack record with 22.5 sacks, knotting up with Michael Strahan of the Giants. Now, the description that was given for Watt on the top 100, Watt set a high standard for himself with 22.5 sacks season in 21, but even if injuries prevented him from quite reaching that height again in 2022, the Steelers' edge rusher's performance still deserves attention. Despite fighting through a torn pectoral, arthroscopic knee surgery, and a rib issue, Watt nevertheless was able to play in 10 games and record 5.5 sacks, still showing his prowess and his limited availability and earning a 5th straight Pro Bowl nod. TJ Watt was on the field for 10 games, most of it in the middle of the season, and he still made the Pro Bowl. Now, I understand that you might be wondering, well, 27, maybe that's a good spot for TJ Watt because of the fact that, yes, he was injured, and yes, he only had 5.5 sacks. But when the Steelers did not have TJ Watt in the middle of the season, they were abysmal. And the defense was okay, but they couldn't win football games. And usually that's the case with a quarterback. But the Steelers frankly, could not win games without TJ Watt. To the point where when he was on the field, especially late in the season, wins at the end of the year that the Steelers needed against the Raiders, the Ravens, and being able to cap it off at the very end of the year against Cleveland to have a shot at potentially making the playoffs, a long shot at that. But TJ Watt is just that guy. He's a dog. He's that dude. And 27 just doesn't seem right. He dropped 21 spots. He just feels like a top 20 player to me. Now, would I have put him top 10 because he did miss time? No. But I still think top 20, top even 25 is fair. I just don't think that TJ Watt should be below Myles Garrett. And that's been a popular thing this offseason. It's been a popular talking point that Myles Garrett, is he a better player than TJ Watt? And maybe because of availability, that's why Garrett was a better player last year. But if you're talking about overall football player, overall skill, TJ Watt is better in coverage. He is better as a tackler. It's questionable who's better against the run. Garrett might have that edge. But if you want to go up and decide who is the best at getting to the passer, who is the best at getting to the quarterback, who has the best moves, who has the best skill set, Myles Garrett might be a little bit stronger. But the way that TJ Watt is able to dip his shoulder and just bull rush to the quarterback, and Garrett's good at that too. But TJ Watt is a better overall well-rounded player. And I think it's kind of hard to dispute that. Especially seeing Garrett in the division. He's not a one-trick pony. But him being able to just frequently rush the passer, get to the quarterback, is the best thing that he's good at. And TJ Watt has other attributes that make him great. There's also going to be some other pass rushers higher on this list. Nick Bosa. I would hope the defensive player of the year is higher than TJ Watt. After TJ Watt was the defensive player of the year and didn't win it this year because of only playing in 10 games and 5.5 sacks. But for Cam Hayward to be at, I think it was 47 on this list, he seems a little bit underrated as well. Where he could be even higher than that. Maybe top 40 for Hayward. But where's Minka? Where's Minka Fitzpatrick? I don't think Minka's going to rank higher than TJ Watt. Is he a top 20 player in the league? I think he's a top safety in the league, but is he top 20? I would be surprised if Minka Fitzpatrick ranks higher than TJ Watt. But at the same time, he's not on the list at all. There's two Steelers unveiled. There have been years where there have been six. When the Steelers were fighting for the AFC North consistently every year, and you knew that they had a realistic chance to win it, it was Ben, it was AB, it was Lev Bell, it was just name whoever you wanted on the defense. The secondary, forget about it. But you can even throw TJ Watt in there, Cam Hayward at some points, Stephon Tuitt, Ryan Shazier, a middle linebacker, before his injury. Had a chance to be able to make his mark as a Pro Bowl type of player. Marquise Pouncey, David DeCastro. Those are the type of guys that you would find on the top 100. But now it's Cam Hayward, now it's TJ Watt. No Steelers offensive players. George Pickens better be on this list next year. Pat Freiermuth should be on this list next year. But right now, no Minka Fitzpatrick, which is a little bit surprising. Will he be in the top 20? I doubt it. The Steelers are being somewhat disrespected by the league. When you don't make the playoffs, that's probably partially why. But if Kenny Pickett can have a breakout season, then that'll take care of a lot. And more attention will be on the Pittsburgh Steelers this season with a real chance of winning the AFC North. Tonight, the Hall of Fame game. Jets, Browns, Joe Thomas will get into the Hall of Fame for the Cleveland Browns this upcoming weekend. It's one of the best football weekends of all. As we begin, Steelers, first preseason game next week. Training camp was awesome yesterday. I got to witness it live. Football is back. The Wake Up Show is presented by 84 Lumber. Put your positive attitude to work at 84 Lumber. Apply at 84lumber.com. The pre-show is next. Sports Radio 937 The Fan.